看来我们只能靠自己了。
地球错失了最后一个机会。
这座宫殿不是庇护所。
我觉得旁边两号或者哪辆几班女的都没。
Hi everyone, and welcome to Middle Earth, your source for insight into China's cultural industry. Listen to those who are making a living by creating and distributing art or content onto the world's second biggest cultural market. I'm your host, Aladdin Faré. As the Olympic Games are finished, today's episode is a bonus one. We'll go into the making of the movie Leap that came out last year on China national volleyball team. Director Ho Sun Chan and Academy Governor at Large and award-winning producer Janet Yang will talk about the incredible journey of the team, the evolution of China over the past few decades, and what it's like to work with acclaimed Chinese actress Gong Li. This episode was originally produced by the Asia Society Museum, Asia Society Southern California, and the Asian World Film Festival. We got a copy of the recording and thought you guys might appreciate it. I did some light editing for clarity. Let me remind you that Middle Earth is produced by China Compass Production, your film production service in the Middle Kingdom. So if you need someone to do some research for your next documentary series in China, reach out to us. Also, Middle Earth is part of TWC, the World of Chinese Podcast Network. The World of Chinese is a bi-monthly English magazine dedicated to Chinese language and culture. TWC takes a modern theme and looks behind the headline to uncover how contemporary issues affect China's society. The latest issue, Call of the Wild, takes a look at the rising interest and risk in outdoor sport in China. And there are other fascinating stories about the country's struggle to create a world-class football team and the story of the first Chinese blind mountaineer. To learn more, go to theworldofchinese.com or check the podcast description for a direct access to insightful content about China. Well, let's get on with the show, and I hope you will enjoy the conversation as much as I did.
I am really pleased to introduce a film and a filmmaker tonight, that both of which I admire very, very much. It is the Chinese submission for the Oscars this year, and it is centered around the story of the Chinese volleyball coach Wang Ping. Behind all that is the amazing director, Peter Ho Sun Chan. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Janet.
So Peter is a director I have known about and admired for many years, well before I met him, which was some time ago. He's quite an international filmmaker in that grew up in Hong Kong, lived also in Thailand for a number of years, studied in the United States, even made a film in Hollywood. He was plucked out of a relative oblivion by Steven Spielberg and made a film with Steven's wife, Kate Capshaw. The film that just stunned me and many others, having won so many awards, was your film, Comrades, Almost a Love Story. But Peter's gone on to make so many different kinds of films, adventure films, musicals, dramas, comedies. In addition, Peter has produced tons of other people's movies, discovered filmmakers, worked in Thailand, produced horror movies. So I'm quite envious of you, Peter, because I find it very difficult to just do one job well, which is producing. You manage to write, direct, and produce. You wear so many hats, and you are a true international citizen. I just want you to talk a little bit about how you arrived at this place where you can straddle so many different worlds.
I think it's a matter of necessity. To me, producing and trying to put on different hats is always something for me to protect my job as a director and to ensure that I could have the freedom to make what I want to make when I come back to the job that I really love most, which is directing. And as a filmmaker, you need to have your team around you. When you need to build a team, you need to be a producer, and you need to work with different talents, sometimes to learn and sometimes to strengthen your position in the industry. And I think it's not different from anywhere else. I think we're a little bit more blessed in a way where the studio system is not as firm or tight as Hollywood, where we are able to make films still pretty much as independent producer or director, very much like independent film, even within the industry in Hong Kong or China now, for that matter.
Exactly. And I think, I suppose one could think that was a handicap, but I think in your case, you've made it a real asset because you have made films that have been blockbusters in China. You've made large films, you've made small films. So I just find that very admirable. And I do believe that there's probably more freedom in Asia to not be pegged to be one kind of filmmaker. Because when I've talked to you in the past, you have a really strong understanding of the different marketplaces. And just I really want to talk primarily about Leap, but and we will in just a second. But how do you assess what market you want to go to with what film?
As much as you want to start with a strategy in terms of where is more lucrative to do business, but you always really start with a film because first and foremost, you're still a filmmaker. And all the other business effect, business side of it, in effect, is really because you want to make better films and you want to make good films and you want to discover new talents or you want to try to reinvent yourself in some way. So no matter how I approach my craft or my business, ultimately, it is you can't really plan it. You really have to find the right project that you really have to do, and then the project will lead you to wherever you are.
So for yourself, as of some time ago, I have observed, as many people have, that you've really been focusing on the China market. And there are many, many wonderful stories to come out of China, but this particular story that you chose about Longping, this Chinese champion volleyball player who amazingly then was hired by the American team, brought the American team to its gold, and then went back to China, did the same for the Chinese team. This is a truly fascinating story. Why did you want to make this?
Well, first of all, I think the Chinese women's volleyball team and their history in the last 40 years has been amazing. They've had an incredible ride. And it also coincides with the economic reform and the open door policy that started in the late 70s in China. So it was not just a movie about volleyball. It was not just a movie about sports, but it's really a movie about how China evolves and changed in the last 30 odd, 40 years. And to me, it's always fascinating to hear stories about China in the 80s when everything became possible. China's gone through a lot of hardships in the past, and all of a sudden the world has changed. To me, I always equate that with another era that I've never been able to live through, which is the 60s in the West or in the US, where everything changes. So to me, I always wanted to capture the essence of the 80s, and I will always want to be able to recreate that and see it on screen. But more important than that, somehow in the center of the last 35, 40 years of volleyball history in China was Longping. And the character just calls for a movie because her ride and her career was so distinguished and at the same time so dramatic. She was the most valuable players, one of the top players in the world. And as you know, volleyball was totally not a Chinese sport to start with. It was dominated by the U.S. teams and, you know, the great U.S. players and Japanese and Cuban and Serbia and Russia. By no way was China counted as one of the top teams of the world. But they made it to the championship in 1981 with Longping as in the center as a players. And she actually won three world champion titles in the 80s with the Chinese women's volleyball team. And then she immigrated to the US. She moved to the US and then she lived in the US and ultimately became the US coach and took the US team and came back to China in 2008 and beat the Chinese team in the Beijing Olympics in 2008. And that was very controversial for Chinese because there we are, a Chinese coach, but she led the U.S. team and she beat the Chinese team. And then she went back to the U.S. and ultimately was summoned back to China and became the Chinese coach in 2013. And then she took the Chinese team back to the top in the Rio Games in 2016. So her whole trajectory of her career was something that was almost like fictional. It was like all written. I mean, it was too dramatic. And then I got during our script, doing our research, I got to meet Lang Ping, and we had lengthy interviews with her and discussions. And I find that she's really a very charismatic character. She is so independent and so determined in what she wants to do. And she works within the system, within the establishment in China, within the politics of China. But at the same time, she was the one that managed to do things her own way. So in a way, she is a very charismatic and individualistic character in a very collective society. So I think that in itself is something that is very unique in China or in Asia or anywhere in the world for that matter. So we found this perfect character and this perfect story to make a movie out of. I had a lot of help. As you know, I envy you, Janet, for having lived through that time. I've never set foot in the mainland until 1993. So all I've heard, in my last 20 years of working with China, was how beautiful it was in the 80s. And through the film, I actually get to experience it a bit. We recreated everything that we could. We had our DP and production designer who lived through those periods and would give me all their contribution in trying to recreate as much as possible what the 80s looked like. And I think the most important thing to me is the spirit of the people in the 80s when they were so hungry to be seen by the world, and how they re-engaged, how China re-engaged with the world in the 80s. And but at the same time, I think there is, what we're trying to do in the film is to show the difference between the 80s and also now, because certainly there are changes in values and sensibilities. And as much as people are working as a whole, because they were really eager to be seen as Chinese to the world, then you have that sense of nationalism or patriotism or pride to be Chinese in the 80s. But at the same time, when you're dealing with the national team players today, who are born mostly in the late 80s or even in the early 90s, and then you see this new generation of kids having very individual thinking, and when they play volleyballs, they don't play with the same sense of the players in the 80s. So you need to deal with the difference between now and then. And I think that is self-explanatory in the film when you see the film. So I think that was also something that we need to deal with, the different sensibility between the players in the 80s and the players today.
So you said you spent a good amount of time with Lang Ping, and she is very charismatic. What did you learn from her about whether she felt conflicted in her heart about working for an American team, or, and then she goes back to China and she has a daughter that she was raising in America for a time, who, by the way, plays her in her younger years. That is just the most amazing coincidence. What else did you learn that helped inform you in making the film?
Well, one of the things that Lang Ping taught me was the spirit of winning, or the spirit of the Chinese women's volleyball. It's not just about, because when you see all the matches, I think it's really perfect to make a sports movie with the women's volleyball team in China, because they're never the strongest team. They never appears to be the strongest team. So they usually lose their first set or two set, and then they would win back at the end. It's almost like catching up at the end. So you're always rooting for them. They would never walk on set and is this best almighty team that nobody would beat. They're always the underdogs. And Lang Ping's words to me was, the spirit of the women's volleyball team in China is not that they think they'll win every time, but they would fight until their last breath. So that, in essence, is Because in China, everybody talks about the spirit of the women's volleyball team as if this is like the Chinese spirit. And I think what is significant about their winnings was not because they're the strongest team, it's because they would never lose. They would never accept losing. So to a certain extent, they're not destined to win, but they just won't accept losing.
That is fascinating. In some ways, it is easier to come in as the underdog because you've got the extra motivation. And did she feel it was different working with the American team?
We didn't get into the psych in working with the American team, but I'm sure that with her experience working with the American team, and she also coached in Italy, she coached in a lot of different places. She actually speaks fluent Italian. She coached in Italy for a few years. And I think that when she came back to coach the Chinese team in 2013, she had the experience of working with young players all over the world. So the way she coached, as you see in the second half of the film, is obviously very different with the way the old coach used to coach her when she was younger, because the national spirit, it was totally different. You know, it's not the same China. So to that extent, I think, I hope that the film actually has a very clear or thorough evaluation, a perspective of what China was and what China is today.
Mm-hmm. I was so thrilled when I heard the announcement that this is the film that China was submitting for the Oscars, because so often they submit films that don't seem necessarily that they will catch on. This one has an immediate relevance, and there's so many fascinating aspects of the filmmaking that will attract an audience, because just watching the exciting sports scenes, you know, the volleyball itself is very, very exciting. But I think it's a glimpse. You know, I'm always trying to humanize the representation of Asians on screen, and I think this does that in droves. And I think many people will be able to relate to the players and the Argus and their injuries. And, you know, you talk about how you brought in that you had the floorboards from the 80s and all the exact equipment. And I think it's a great portrayal, as you say, of a country, of a team, of a person, all of it. And the, you know, in a way that's just very human and very relatable. So what for you was that? That was my takeaway. What for you were the most gratifying things about making this film?
Again, it was really about living through the last 35 years in 2.5 hours. I think for me, it took us months and months of research and a couple of years of script development, and ultimately the production. We were so blessed with the fact that we've gotten so many real things, including the players. The players in the 80s were all real athletes that we have recruited from out of 2,000 odd different auditioned different players who've never had any acting experiences, but they were real players, so they all play with conviction, and ultimately getting the national team to play for us, and getting Lydia Bai Longping's daughter to play her mother was also a magical experience, because to her it's her conviction in proving to her mom that she's one of the best volleyball players, you know, today. Even, you know, she plays volleyball herself in Stanford, but she was advised not to get into professional volleyball when she graduated college because her mom see how difficult that path was going to be. And I think to her that has always been something that a missing piece in her life, that she felt like she was not good enough. And to her, I think this film was her statement to prove to her mom that she could be better, or at least she could be closer to her mom in playing that. So, because I remember scenes where she would disagree with some of my direction, and she would come to me and said, you know what, I think my mom wouldn't do this on set. I think she would do this. Yeah, because there was a scene where I thought she should tear up or cry, And she said, you know what, my mom would probably run out of the stadium and she would cry outside. She wouldn't cry here, you know. So it was a very strange experience that when we were doing a film, it almost felt like a documentary. And especially with the second half where we had the whole national team playing for us, they were using their own dialogues, their own lines, and because they're actually not acting, they're reenacting what they have done before a few years ago. And to the detail of the props and the stuff we used in the 80s, we actually were very lucky to be able to use the exact floorboards that of the old stadium where the old team, where the champions team in the 80s played and practiced. They were tearing down the old stadium as we were starting production. So we shipped all the wood and the floorboard from the old stadiums from the southern China to Beijing. So the shiny surface of the old stadium were not shined by, you know, it was really the sweat and the blood and the, you know, where all the players were rolling on the old floorboards when, you know, with the same splinters and everything. So everything was very authentic. So when you walk on set during the whole production, we always often have goosebumps on us because it felt like we're really living their, you know, the story. We're really living the truth and the fact.
And I think that is my point. That's what I loved about it. It's very raw. You have everybody stripped down to, you know, it's a very primal level because they're just trying to hit the ball, you know, win the game or whatever. And you know, like so many sports, and for some reason I felt it more watching this than and many others, the pain, the injuries, you know, are so close to the surface. And so you feel it on a visceral level. You managed to get China's biggest star, I would say. She has been that for many people for many years, an iconic actress. She's done so much incredible work. And of course, I'm speaking of Gong Li. How was that process? How did you convince her to do it? Or maybe you didn't need to convince her, maybe she wanted to. And what was it like working with her?
You know, the first person that came to mind to play Lang Ping, the minute we decided that we're going to make this movie, was Gong Li. And I called her even before we had a synopsis. I mean, when we had nothing, when I decided that, okay, this is my next film. I called her and then we met like within a few days. You know, I flew down to her set when she was doing another movie. And I met her in the hotel coffee shop, and then she turned me down right there. And she turned me down and she said, not that she didn't want to play this, but there's way too much baggage and pressure in playing Lang Ping, because Lang Ping is such a household name in China that to be able to convince the audience that she's Lang Ping would be an impossibility. Mm. And she said, you know, I would be better off looking for someone else. And if I really can't think of anyone else, then when I have the script, then I should come back to her. Obviously, I did not give up. And I went back to her three times. And every single time I told her, all you needed to do is to come on set and just be there and put on the right hair and makeup. And trust me, you'll be Lang Ping. Nobody would doubt, because I don't think I can find anyone else that I could convince the audience to buy into the fact that this actress can pull off as Lang Ping. To me, Gong Li and Lang Ping are very similar. Gong Li is the entertainment industry's name card, Chinese name card to the world. And Lang Ping is the sports Chinese name cards to the world. And they both were born in the 60s, and they were both one of the first Chinese women to be recognized by the world. And I think she has a very similar stature as Lang Ping. And she has that presence and that command of the audience that I think all she needed to do is to stand there and she doesn't even need to act. And obviously, Gong Li is not just going to buy into that. So when we got our first draft written, I sent it to her. She came back with a lot of notes and we went through every single scene. And finally, when she decided that she would do the movie, and she went back to China and she was, she spent a month touring with the volleyball team and using her little notebook and jot down all the notes of Longping's gestures and how she walks and how she talks and how she give her thumbs up to the players. So she learned every little detail of Longping. And when our first trailer came out in China, it was all over the internet. People were like shocked that how similar Gong Li and Longping looked like, and how similar Gong Li, you know, how Gong Li walks like Longping, and her shoulder would crouch back like Longping, because Longping has multiple injuries. So the way she walks was very, very different. Gong Li learned every single thing. So she did her job, she did her work, she did a lot of research, a lot of hard work. And the result is it's amazing.
I agree that she didn't really have to do much. She didn't have to be that physical, but in her face, you see so much, so much. You see the compassion, or you see the disappointment, or you see that, you know, there's so much depth and gravitas in her face. Still, we've never seen Gong Li in a role like this. And it was a bit of a shock to see her in the wig and, you know, in her sports attire. But it seemed so fitting. When you say she went around and toured the different sports teams, did she do that with Longping, or did she see footage?
But she was just observing Longping sitting next to her for a month, you know, touring with the team and also learning volleyball from some other coaches, you know, in the national team.
Are there any other particular things you want to talk about? Any particular struggles or disappointments or obstacles in terms of getting the film made or getting the film out there?
It's a lot of challenges throughout, but the process of making the movie was so incredibly smooth. Not without challenges though, because every single turn, like I said, if you make this film in Hollywood, you wouldn't be able to do it because the studio needs to be 100% sure that everything is going to be smooth. And when we were walking into, you know, when we were getting into production, everything was so uncertain, but everything turned out well. You know that we had the national team, which was a blessing, but we only had them for 9 days. Mm-hmm. And in that 9 days, we had to shoot the match with Brazil. And then that match alone should have taken more than 9 days. And we shot that match in 3 days. And then we shot all the other scenes with the, I mean, when I said the national team, that means the second half of the movie. We shot the rest of the scenes with all the players in 5 days.
Where did you find the Brazilian and American and, you know, all the other international players?
They're actually all real national team players. I mean, the American team players, one of them, Logan Tom, actually played the match in 2008 in Beijing. She was Longping's protege in the 2008 U.S. team. And the Brazilian, three of them actually played the real match in Rio. So they're really reenacting, not just the Chinese team, but also the Brazilian team and the U.S. team. And even the Japanese team, we got a couple of Japanese national team players that just retired from the national team. So they're all real volleyball players. And even cameos, like the Thai teams, we flew the whole Thai teams to China for like one quick little montage. So here we are shooting a sports movie with a director that don't know anything about volleyball. We were figuring out how to shoot volleyball with the DPs and with all the camera operators, how to capture all the movements. And we were learning as we go. So we shot 3 matches of volleyball, and every single match we got better and better and better. And we got more cameras and more cameras and more cameras, you know, from 4 cameras to 6 cameras to 12 cameras. This is unheard of, you know, because if you work on a film like this in Hollywood, you would have to plan everything. But if you plan everything, you wouldn't be able to do it, you know, because there's no way you could plan everything ahead and actually ended up with what we've got. Mm-hmm. But somehow we made it with this film. And I think that in itself was really incredible.
Well, it really is quite a feat on a number of levels. So congratulations.
One of the biggest hurdle at the end was when we were getting ready to release the film in January, which the film was supposed to be released in January 25th. And we went through the whole premiere and whatnot, you know, on the 17th to the 19th and showing it to like over 10,000 people on different premieres in China. And then I just wrapped and went back to Hong Kong for my Chinese New Year holiday. When I landed in Hong Kong, I got a phone call and said, you know, the film was postponed because the cinemas are going to be closed. So we're not going to release the film. So I was sitting from January 21st, 22nd to September, wondering when the film is going to be released. So ultimately, the film was released in September, supposedly worldwide, but technically, you know, wherever cinemas were open, and very rarely people get to see it in a cinema. Now that with the Academy screening room and with everything that we're doing now, so I hope people could see it online. A lot of people actually get to see them online, but not technically in the cinemas. But they did see it in the cinema when the film opened in late September, early October.
Where many of us are very, very envious about how packed the movie theaters in China are.
Yeah.
Our theatrical business has been decimated.
I know.
For the time being. And yes, so there's that too, a whole other conversation. I want to pose some questions from audience members, if you don't mind. One of them is from someone named Clint Wu. Is there a story that you'd like to explore that you haven't yet had the opportunity to tell?
You know, I always come up with, you know, something new. And I'm in the middle of working on a script for my next project. And I think it would be a more personal film, you know, having made 2 sports movies back to back, one about volleyball and the other one about tennis, which is yet to come out. I really have a yearning to go back to make something that is smaller and something that is very, very personal about my own relationship with myself and the people around me. And I think that after having made a lot of bigger movies in the last 15 years working in China, I really want to do something that is just for me, just for myself, and which I haven't done so in a long, long time. So that's going to be my next project.
Mm. Well, many people will be waiting with bated breath about that. From Simon Chu, hello, Simon. He asked whether you think that Asian cinema can ever go global. Why has there never been a Chinese film which is one an Academy Award? Barely any have ever been nominated, just very few. And what is preventing this from happening?
And I think Asian cinema has gone global already, you know, and it's not like Asian cinemas are not seen, particularly Chinese cinemas from the 80s. You know, we've seen a lot of great Chinese auteurs, fifth generation directors telling very Chinese stories that has been seen all over the world. But the thing is, I think the world is pretty much, especially with streaming, and the world is pretty much, in a way, homogenized, because I think the gaps are really bridging. Maybe not so much in terms of Hollywood blockbuster, but I'm sure that, but even Hollywood blockbusters, there are more and more Chinese characters, and but I think that, you know, with last year's Parasite, it's a Korean movie. It won not only Best Foreign Film, but Best International Feature, but Best Picture. And I think that because the problems of the world and the societies are becoming more and more similar wherever you are. You know, the same problems that is happening to people in LA or New York are the problems that are happening to people in Hong Kong or Beijing or Seoul or Tokyo or Bangkok. So I think that our stories are being more and more similar. And it's just the habit of people watching them in foreign language and reading subtitles. And I think that streaming certainly helps because you've got more the decision, it's less costly for the audience to go watch a foreign film. You don't have the cost of time, of traveling, of scheduling. You can just click on your TV and watch. And sometimes when you don't catch the subtitles, you can always pause and rewind and go back and watch it again. To me, I really think that when you click on one of these streaming platforms and then you watch, a lot of shows are in foreign languages. And I watch more foreign language shows than I watch English language shows or Chinese language shows. So I think the world is really bridging nicely in terms of the entertainment materials that we get to watch or the content that we get to watch on the streaming platforms. So I, for one, is all for the streaming platforms because it's helping to bridge the world. It's helping us to get more freedom for audience to watch things that they normally wouldn't choose. One of the very interesting phenomenon in China in the last few years is it's very hard for filmmakers to catch up because the obvious, the movie that obviously would be a blockbuster usually underperform. And the bigger the stars, the bigger the budget doesn't mean the bigger the box office. It probably means the bigger the opening weekend. But the thing is, it doesn't mean that it's going to be, you know, the winner at the end. Usually the opening weekend numbers is not indicative of the end result of the film in China. This ticketing platforms have a rating system that comes from ticket buyers who have seen the film. And they would rate the film, and their rating ended up determining the outcome of the final box office. And most of the times, the final box office winners are dark horses that you never expect to win. And I think that trend in China, it actually has become a trend. It's a scenario that I have not seen anywhere else in the world. So spending a lot of PNAs, spending a lot of movie stars and on budget to make blockbuster is not a sure win. And that helps to encourage investors to bet on films that are not exactly right there in the middle. And I think that gives young filmmakers a lot of freedom to explore. But however, it's almost like democracy in a way. It doesn't mean that, for me personally, it doesn't mean that most of these films that ended up breaking out of the box and became the biggest box office winners are not necessarily films that I like. Sometimes there are films that I totally dislike. But however, who am I to judge what is good and what is bad? It's really the audience who gets to judge them. So I think in that true sense, It's on the theatrical pattern. It's almost like it's real democracy. Mm-hmm. You know, where the audience really ended up getting to choose. And I think that aspect in China it's very strange. And I think it probably would take Hollywood executives to study them and to understand what it means. And maybe it could be adapted all over the world. You see, as you see, 90% of the tickets that are being purchased are the advanced sales. And people don't go to the cinemas to pick what film they're going to watch anymore. They just pick the film from friends or from the website's recommendations because of movie critics that are really just audience. Mm-hmm. You know, they decide what film should work and what film shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And that is very encouraging.
I think we have time for one more question, so I'm going to combine two questions from two different people, and it's about casting. And what do you look for in actors, and is it different casting in different countries?
You know, working in the industry, casting, you've always want to try to cast movie stars as much as you can. But however, casting movie star blindly just because they're movie stars is going to kill your film. It's going to hurt the film. So what I've tried to do all my life when I was casting with big names that I work with, I try to have very, very long conversations with them and try to understand who they are, who they really are, and try to bring out the side of some aspects of the movie stars or from their own life, draw from their own life experience that audience would not know of, and try to magnify them and write them into the script. So I like to improvise a lot. I don't lock my script down until I have an actor or an actress, and then I would work with them and understand and draw from the experience and actually put their experience into the script as much as I can. So the audience could see a side of them that they've never seen before. So that has proven to be, I hate to use the word formula, but that has proven to me to be a way of working with actors that makes my actors different in my films than the persona they've been portrayed before. It's often very, very effective for me. With Leon Lai in Comrades, with even with Jia Wei in Dearest. So I've often worked with actors, or with Huang Xiaoming in American Dreams in China. So all those are, after having in-depth conversation with your actors, you could make them feel comfortable and you could make them grow into the character. But with Leap, it's completely different. With Leap, it's other than Gong Li and Huang Bo,
all yeah. The other actors is always so great watch, yeah.
They're all amateur actors. They've never acted in their lives. And don't ask me how I pulled that off. I don't remember how I pulled it off. It was really difficult. And it's the first time that I actually work with, have a acting coach on set. Because I'm not an actor. I've never studied acting. There's no way that I actually could work with amateur actors and teach them how to act. Mm-hmm. I can only tell them what I want and what I need, and I can say yes or no, but I won't be able to teach them how to do it. So mm-hmm. I actually had one of, you know, he was a great acting coach from the Central Film Academy, Drama Academy. And that is a new experience for me too. Mm-hmm. Let me leave with one note. They were so authentic that I was worried for a while that it would make our actors look like actors, because they're so real that no matter how good Gong Li and Huang Bo is, they're still acting. But the others are not acting. You know, they're real.
Yeah. Well, it was very seamless, you know. And honestly, Gong Li, because she was so well disguised, if you've never seen her look like that, yeah. It wasn't. Sometimes in movies, the star will pop, you know, you like, oh, that is that person. And even Huang Bo, I thought he blended in perfectly. So, yeah, well, congratulations again. And we're so happy to have you featured on this program and to support you and so much of what you've done. Truly, you've had an extraordinary career. I know you also, you told me you've been staying at home with your family this entire time, so you have a rich family life too, and COVID has prevented you from traveling to China to promote your film, which is very sad, but thank you for all you do for filmmakers.
Thank you Jenna.
That's it for today's episode, and a big shout out to the Asia Society Museum and Asia Society Southern California, who hosted the conversation, and thank you, dear listeners, to stay until the end credit. Let me remind you that Middle Earth is part of TWC, the World of Chinese Podcast Network. If you want to know more behind the headlines, go to theworldofchinese.com and order your latest copy. Today's bonus episode was edited by Alana Faré.
Music by Sean Calvo.
And distributed by the World of Chinese Podcast Network. I guess you already all have a podcast app, but if you don't want to miss the coming show or listen to the old ones, you can subscribe to our feed. And if you like the show, please consider sharing it with a friend. Always help with the algorithm to get more subscribers and our ego. Hope to see you next time and stay safe. Bye-bye.